Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for June 28th, 2024. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview the Wimbledon Championships. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce our co-host Parsa. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. It's Wimbledon time. It's a little bit of a jam-packed schedule here. Squeezing in the Olympics after this event, and then the comeback to the hard court swing in North America, and then the U.S. Open. There's going to be a lot of fun tennis to watch. I'm sure similar viewers right now or listeners to our podcast are probably paying attention to the Euro Cup, to Copa America. I think some fun soccer going on as well. And it's amazing beginning to the summer, and look forward to seeing how Wimbledon transpires.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, very interesting fortnight for many different reasons. Obviously, we're pretty much there on a changing of a guard for the men's side, right? We have, obviously, Djokovic is hanging on. He's coming back from surgery. Nadal is not playing. Federer has now retired for a couple of years. Murray is pretty much done. I don't even know if he's going to play. And then we have Alcaraz winning the last slam. We have Sinner winning the slam before that, and then we have Alcaraz winning Wimbledon last year as well. So it's kind of their show now for the most part, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how they develop as the draw goes on. It's not that easy, I would say, for both of them. It's going to be, so that's the first thing, right, Parsa? Is it now Alcaraz and Sinner show? You would think, when you're looking at the media, you're looking at even like Nike, from Nike's perspective, they just gave Alcaraz a $200 million 10-year deal, right? So they definitely believe in him. I'm sure his French Open victory recently didn't hurt, that cause there. Sinner just signed, another $15 million a year deal last year for 10 years. So they locked these guys in, right? So they're saying, these guys are going to be the face of tennis for that brand, which is the biggest global sporting company, right? And we're always looking to replace Nadal, Djokovic, Federer, who are the next guys? And I don't know if they're going to reach the global standpoint that those guys have from a charisma standpoint and just a game style. But obviously, somebody has to do it. And even if it's not going to be at that level, it looks like it's going to be these two guys. Maybe Holger Rune steps in there, does some damage too. But, he's still a little bit behind, obviously, what these guys have been doing. So that's the first point that I want to hear your take on. Then obviously how Djokovic is going to do here, because he bowed out, he withdrew from the French with a meniscus tear, and now he's back and he played a practice match today with Medvedev, and he won that one, so it looks like he's okay. We got Murray on his last legs. He had a cyst on his spine that he had to get removed, and I mean, that guy is just an absolute warrior, Barca. I mean, the guy, you have to bury him 6 feet under the ground for him not to play tournaments anymore.
Talking about maximizing, right?
Yeah, he's just next level, right? And then we got some dangerous guys like Jack Draper, who's coming into his own. The Brit, we have Matteo Berrettini, who I don't think anybody wants to play on this court. Then, as I mentioned, Holger Rune. We have your American contingent, who is kind of there, but are they at the elite level? Maybe not. You got Fritz, Paul, Ben Shelton, and so on and so forth. So, I want to hear, let's start with that. Just point one is what are your thoughts on, Alcaraz and Sinner? Is it their show now? And, or do they still have some work to do, with Djokovic still around and some of the other guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question. I obviously they have announced themselves on the world stage. Alcaraz, Sinner, I don't want to say it's some sort of replacement of what goats were, because those shoes are very big shoes to fill. But I would say that going into all of these Grand Slams, they are always going to be in the conversation as a threat to win it, no matter the surface. And they are the it players at the moment, but there is still, a hungry Djokovic and a hungry contingency that's also trying to enter into that realm and in there, right? We had Holger Rune who was knocking on the door and has taken a step back. We had Shapovalov for a while on the doorstep and then has taken a step back. And I think you got Berrettini who sometimes makes noise and sometimes has now really taken a step back. So you've got others emerging, and just constant movement right now in the tennis world. And it looks like, I don't know how you feel about this, but going to the Americans, I definitely feel they are one step below the elite level, but they are coming together as a group. And although Taylor Fritz's ranking may have dropped a touch, I think it's actually very healthy for him to get this organized group. As I think, as a collective group, they will push themselves into the top 10 in the world. And I think when that happens, I think you might see an American champion. What I like about Tommy Paul is Tommy Paul is the very smooth. He needs the quicker courts. He gives a shit a little bit less, and it may be false, but his external appearance is he's okay with the pressure and the moment. And you can kind of see the anguish when Taylor Fritz is there. You can see it with Ben Shelton. You can see it with Francis Tiafoe. But Tommy's got a little bit of a, I think his game was more incomplete the last couple of years, and I think he's rounding into his own. His forehand is solidified, his backhand, his change of pace. I watched him at the US Open last year in a five-set thriller, and really he completely changes games completely from set one and two to sets three, four, and five. He started to introduce variety in every match I've watched. I haven't watched that many, but I probably watched him play seven times since that US Open. He is also doing the same exact thing, and playing with a ton of variety now against every single person, and he's coming at you with an all-court game. And I think this is the end result is these results that you're seeing. He's starting to emerge as someone who has a couple of wins over Alcaraz, right? So it's not like Alcaraz is going to look at that name and go, oh man, that's the one guy I really don't want to play. Why? Because he can move, he can change paces, he can dink and dunk, he can move the ball around the court, he can change speeds. You don't want to play a guy like that, because if you're slightly off, it becomes a very, very dangerous opponent and very, very tricky to play. And then coupled to it with a good attitude, I think for the Americans and leading the way with Tommy Paul, I think you've got something there.
Yeah, and I think one thing with Paul too, I'm a big fan. Honestly, I really like watching him play. I love his service motion. He's super fast. Like his speed is very, very underrated. I mean, he gets to almost every single ball, right? So I think and I think what helped him too is they were like, okay, TFO is going to be top 10, Fritz is going to be top 10, maybe Shelton's going to win a Grand Slam. Nobody was ever really saying that about Tommy Paul. He was the party guy. He was, always at the nightclubs and stuff like that. And now he's kind of really been taking it seriously. He's got a good team around him, and I mean, he's put it together.
As growing up, Nima, I think important information for people to know too. Growing up, he was always the most talented guy. So he used to rely on his talent, and I think that's what's changed here at age 26, 27, the girlfriend, the whole thing. I think there's a maturity and responsibility.
Absolutely. And it's great to see. I mean, I would love for him to make quarter semis and do something big at the US Open. I think it would be good for the sport. So Parsa, before we get into the draws, women's draw. Now, it's again, I think it's going to be a complete surprise because, when you get into Roland Garros territory, we're like, okay, Swiatek, it's her. She's the queen of the court, right? Who's going to beat her? And she's won it four times now. She had that really good match with Osaka at the French second round, where it was like right to the end. But other than that, she pretty much wiped the court with everybody else, right? So I don't think, Swiatek is going to win Wimbledon. Can she? Of course. But I don't think she's the favorite by any means. She hasn't even played on grass. She hasn't played a tournament since French. So,
I mean, she could lose first round. Kind of, I mean, Kenin's not an easy out. You know?
No, and Kenin's very mentally confident player. You know, she believes that she can win. You know, she's obviously a bit temperamental, but I don't think she's going out there saying, I'm scared of playing, you know, the number one player in the world, which is good. And she's also a Grand Slam champion, winning the Australian Open a few years back. Then, as we talked about off air, we have Naomi Osaka, who is looking really good. I think she's in a really good headspace. And, you know, she said, I don't know if you heard her, Parsa, but she's looking to peak in NYC later this summer. But why wait, right? Like, if your game is there, you got the serve, you got the, you know, the ground strokes. She hasn't played at Wimbledon since 2019. So that's obviously a major factor. However, with that serve, you know, she took some, you know, some serving tips from Nick Kyrgios back in LA and in the offseason, January, December. I mean, I think she's looking good, and watch out for her. We have, you know, Katie Poulter, who's, you know, a British player who's had some great results on the grass this spring, summer. I think she could do some damage. But again, you are alluding to the fact that she has disappointed, you know, when the tournament does roll around, when the biggest grass tournament of the season rolls around. So we'll see how that, you know, goes for her. And then finally, we have Sabalenka, who to me is probably the most charismatic and engaging player on the WTA. You know, I like to watch her matches, and, you know, she brings a little bit of, you know, zest and fun to, you know, she's temperamental. She hits the ball really hard. She really wants to win. She hates to lose. She throws her racket. So there's a little bit of everything, right? And she does well. So you can't say, okay, well, her behavior is poor, or her behavior is great. You know, she's gone through turmoil. There's the whole ball of wax there, right? And she's a two-time major winner. So can she add Wimbledon to her resume? So before we get into the draws, what are your thoughts on that in terms of having a pretty open draw, you know, Świątek, Osaka, and then so on?
You want me to go through the draw a little bit?
Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the women's game, it's been sort of unknown, but like you were alluding to, you know, when you get to the dirt, you know who's going to be the boss. And usually at Wimbledon, you get the Rybakinas and those type of people stepping up. I do think there's a clear favorite, Nima. I'm a little bit disagreement here. I think we have one very consistent player who's deep in every slam. And I think she's going to win it. So there you go. There's my favorite. I'm going to go with Aryna Sabalenka. I think that she is a different level player on any surface. I think you have to deal with her stuff. And she is dealing with her own self very, very well. But I feel like others are going to have to deal with her power, her ferociousness, her fighting ability, her serve, her attacking of the second serve. I think there's so much that she does so well for what she does, and no matter the surface, she seems to always be in the mix no matter what, and a very, very difficult out. The other player I look at in the top, obviously Ons has been in the Wimbledon final, is it three times now, Nima, or two times?
Last couple years.
Yeah, last couple years. She's got Rybakina in her sights, so I think that's going to be a little bit dangerous and some interesting plot twists over there. You know, in the top half, you know, you've got Danielle Collins, who's been playing very, very well, and sort of this renaissance ever since she told herself she's done. Now all of a sudden she's playing, you know, some serious ball.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, as I work down the draw, you know, there is only a few that really could make some noise. You know, like, I would love to say that Madison Keys is a threat, but Madison Keys, we know what Madison Keys is. She's going to play really well. We're going to get really excited, and it's going to be a quarter or semi, and she's just going to fall short. That's unfortunately her MO, and what she does. And then you got Coco Gauff, who, you know, she'll probably be the one that gives the most problems to Sabalenka in the semifinal. I think that's pretty much going to be the final. And in the end of the day, I think it's going to be a Sabalenka winning again. And just for Ons' own pure torture. I hope it's not Ons in the final. I hope it's someone like Pegula or someone like that who makes it, just because I don't want to see Ons lose again.
Yeah, it's good. And you know who you didn't even mention is Von der Rusa.
Yep.
Who won the tournament last year. She's defending champion. Comes in as a sixth seed. Nobody saw that coming. And it was interesting because last year I was in the players' lounge. And, you know, I believe she made the quarters. And so I was there towards the latter stages of the tournament. And I'm sitting there having some lunch. And Barca, it's amazing, like, watching these players, like, in their element, you know. Like, you would never think that this girl just won Wimbledon a couple months ago. You know, she's sitting there kind of, like, very unassuming with her hoodie on. And, you know, just looks a college student. You know what I mean? And, you know, she's a Grand Slam winner. And listen, I would be shocked if she repeats here. She hasn't really shown us anything that would indicate that. And probably, you know, she's still number six because of a ton of points, you know, that she has from winning, obviously defending, you know, being the defending champion. So we'll see how that works for her after this tournament. But I mean, if I'm looking at this draw, I mean, top half is very, very difficult because you have Leily Fernandez, who's playing really well. She's in the Eastbourne final this week. Can she do some damage? We have, you know, a former winner in Rybakina, who has had some health issues now for the last few months. I think she's got, we don't know exactly what it is. Could be an autoimmune thing or whatever, but she's always been in and out. Like, she hasn't been really feeling her best. If she's feeling great, I mean, listen, I don't think anybody really wants to play her, but that's a little bit unknown. And then you have, obviously, we talked about Ons, we talked about Daniel Collins, Ostapenko, you know, Caroline Garcia, and then Świątek. So I think it's going to be a total surprise. I think the top half is very wide open. You got some great players, Svitolina, so on and so forth. I mean, I'm just really throwing, you know, like a Hail Mary on this. And I'm going to go with Rybakina, if she can keep it healthy, to make the finals. And then the bottom half is a little bit more, I would say, stable in terms of favorites. You know, we have Osaka, you have your Sabalenkas. But again, it's Coco Gauff. You know, Mira Andreev, who's, you know, really good up and comer. Somebody to look out for Maria Sakkari, who's been struggling. I mean, I really don't know either. I would say, if I'm going to bet on it, I would say that I'm going to be going with something a little bit different than you. I'm going to be going with a Coco Gauff Rybakina final, which is, I mean, I think not very typical of, and I don't think a lot of people are going to pick that. And I'm going to say Coco Gauff is going to become the Wimbledon champion here. So I'm going to go a little bit against the grain, and people are going to be like, what is this guy talking about? But that's going to be my pick at this point, just because, like I said, I think it's very wide open. I don't think you have a lot of perennial great grass court players in the mix. If Rybakina was totally healthy and feeling great, I would pick her without a doubt. If Ons Jabeur hadn't been injured for this past year, I would say that karma has to be on her side, and, you know, she has to win one of these, and it would be here. But that hasn't been the case either. So for that reason, you know, I'm going to be going with Coco Gauff, because, listen, she's a Grand Slam winner. You were talking very highly of her last spring. And there's no reason why, you know, she can't do well here and go all the way. If she just manages her draw, I think she's got a great tactical coach in Brad Gilbert. And I think that, you know, this might work out for her the way that she wants. Moving now to the men's draw, which is a little bit, is tricky as well too, but we have obviously some guys who have won a ton of majors as well as some recent ones. We have Jannik Sinner debuting as the world number one in a slam. He's got a pretty tricky draw though, Parsa. I mean, he's got Berrettini potentially second round, his countryman, and a guy who's just going to be cracking a serve, like, you know, high 130s, low 140s. I mean, good luck getting that thing back. So it's going to be a super, and he's a Wimbledon finalist. So let's not forget that too, right? So it's going to be a challenge there for Sinner. We have Dimitrov, who's had a great renaissance. I know we've dogged him now for years, but Parse, I mean, listen, the guy has really turned his career around in his early 30s, 33 years old now, playing arguably the best tennis of his career. You got Ben Shelton, again, another dangerous guy. Shapovalov, who plays some really good grass court tennis. You know, you got Griekspoor, who's another dangerous guy on this surface. Not a lot of people follow him, but, you know, he's really good. You got Zhang, who's a great athlete. Mannarino, who's obviously in the twilight of his career, but he's good on grass. Alcaraz is there. Let's not forget about him. You know, he's got to be probably the 1-2 clear favorite to win this. Casper Ruud, who, again, I think he's just here, you know, just to, you know, explore London a little bit and have some fun. I don't see him getting past, you know, maybe the second, third round. So it's going to be for me. And then Tommy Paul, who we've talked about in length a little bit earlier in the show. So I would say that the three guys here that look the best to me are Sinner, Alcaraz, and Tommy Paul. And I mean, that's going to be tough. I would say Sinner is probably due to get Alcaraz, but I think Alcaraz has a bit of a mental advantage over Sinner in these types of moments. And I don't think Tommy Paul is where he needs to be mentally yet to make the semis or finals of a major, even though I would like to see it. So for that reason, I'm going with Alcaraz to make the finals here. So before we get into the bottom half, I'll let you say your thoughts on the top half of the men's draw.
Yeah, I mean, I that was like very, very thorough and very good. Top half, you know, for me, it's there's a lot of tricky and stacked type of matchups, like you're alluding to, between Sinner and Berrettini, who no one wants to see, and even Jari, I look at as someone who can inflict damage. Lloyd Harris, massive serve. Mikkelsen, again, massive game. Ben Shelton, been struggling. Dimitrov, the renaissance, as you alluded to. Mannarino, always a difficult out, although that'll be a very interesting first round with Monfils. Yeah. You know, very entertaining for sure. You've got Kovacevic, who's a former student of mine in my programs, which is insane that I'm talking about him now on a podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
The best story is he was also like on the bottom court and used to beg to get into my programs. And I'd be like, you know, finally his dad was such a nice guy. I was like, sure.
What line is this guy on?
Kovacevic is, he's playing Medvedev first round, number 31.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He did it the hard way. He was always extremely athletic. But very, very lazy and just didn't work very hard.
He's got a one-hander, right?
That's right, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
He's always had the same strokes, too. When he was 12 years old, the guy looks exactly the same, just a bigger version of him at 12. So wow. That was a little interesting tidbit. You know, TFO, I don't know. I'm not super happy. He needs to find Wayne Ferreira again. You know, you got Jordan Thompson, who can create some noise. Tommy Paul, who, you know, possible, you know, can definitely create some noise. But I don't see Tommy Paul beating Alcaraz in the quarterfinal. And I'm definitely foreseeing a Sinner Alcaraz semifinal. And I think they're going to destroy each other, Nima. And I think it's going to be Alcaraz advancing to the final in that match. And I think it's going to be very tight.
Yeah. And as we move now to the bottom half, we have Rublev, who's been struggling recently. Musetti, who's had a couple good weeks on grass, but I wouldn't put a lot of stock on him to do a lot of damage here at Wimbledon, even though he's a nice, crafty guy. A guy who I really would love to see, again, like a Tommy Paul, I really enjoy watching him play, is Sepp Korda. You know what I mean? Very smooth, silky guy. A lot taller than people think he is. He's 6'5". He's a huge guy, right? Like,
it's a serve, though, right?
I don't know why he doesn't, like, the guy's 20 in the world, right? Like, he's really good. But, like, why is he not, like, 8 in the world?
Serve. You know what I mean? It's simple. The guy should be...
You don't think his serve is that good?
He should be serving 135, 140 miles an hour at that height.
Okay, so he needs to get a little bit more purchase there. I thought actually it serves pretty good, but I haven't really looked at the MPH on it. But yeah, I mean, he doesn't get a ton of aces on it, right?
But take a look at the motion too. It's a little stiff. It's not like, it's not, you know, like a rubber arm and he's snapping it. And like you see Kyrgios, there's so much athleticism going into the toss, yeah. You know, that's not, and he, I think he's capable because his forehand, just like you're alluding to, is very smooth. He's a very smooth player. So why is it not translating to the overhead motion? I think, you know, I'm sure that he's got a whole team trying to figure that one up.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, hopefully. And then we got Tsitsipas, who has been up and down this year. I mean, he's not great, but he's not terrible. But I don't. And again, another guy who technically should be pretty good on grass, right? He's got the feel. He's got the one-hander. You know, he's a big athletic guy, but not a lot. I mean, people keep talking about Tsitsipas's forehand, but to me, he doesn't. I don't think he's got one of the biggest forehands in the game. I think there's a lot of guys who can hit it bigger, but it's obviously, you know, served him well throughout the years. We have Taylor Fritz, who just advanced to the Eastbourne final. So, again, for me, Fritz is one of those guys who he's very, very durable. I mean, the guy can literally play 30 tournaments a year, Barca, and he looks like he's barely ever getting injured, loves to compete, you know what I mean? But he's fallen, for as much as he plays, to be like 12 in the world, I would think he's not super happy with that. You know what I mean? So
well, he's definitely again, not he's, happy. He's probably good. Yeah, you saw on Netflix. He's not happy to not be the number one American.
Yeah, and to me, like, you know, he got up to 5 in the world briefly, but that was also because the rankings were a little bit messed up, and, you know, a lot of guys were coming in and out, and then he dropped pretty quickly out of the top 10 again. So we'll see how he does. I don't think he's the most athletic guy. I think that's what kind of holds him back. But again, I super respect his work ethic and everything that he does to try to get there. We have a guy that I actually, literally where I'm sitting right now, 5 minutes from here, he used to play a couple guys that I used to coach in, Alejandro Tabilo. He was one of the top, you know, born in Toronto, now he plays for Chile. And listen, the guy won the most national titles ever in Canadian history. And listen, he's in the finals of Mallorca this week, his third final. He's up to 20 in the world, 27 years old. I mean, what a year he's having.
Oh, right? My gosh. Huge.
And I would never have guessed that. I mean, like, but listen, he not based on junior-wise, he was always the best. And then he was a little bit overweight and people were like, yeah, he's going to dominate here but not do much in the pros. And then he got to the pros. He really didn't do much for like 5 years, 5, 6, 7 years, right? And then he changed, you know, to play for Chile because he couldn't really get on the Davis Cup team here because Canada had a really, you know, top Davis Cup team. And now, I mean, listen, he's already made $1 million this year. And, you know, who's stopping him at this point? So let's see how he does. We got Jack Draper, who's, I think, a guy who's great for the game. I think he really appeals to the younger audience. He's got the looks. He's got the game. To me, he's kind of in that Holger Rune territory where he's a bit stiff. He's not a very loose player, but he's very mechanical. But he's got the leftiness. And, I mean, hopefully he does well here. And then we got Zverev, who, I mean, listen, is grass really his thing? Probably not, but he's got the serve. I don't know how well he's going to do. A guy that we really got to look to here, Barca, is Hubert Hurkacz. And, you know, he's been in the semis here before. And, I mean, what a serve that guy's got. And I'll tell you right now, before I even read the rest of the draw, I think he's going to the finals.
Wow.
So, and then we got, you know, Felix, who, to me, he's got enough talent to always be around 20, 25 in the world, maybe a little bit better. Can he get higher than that? I really don't know. He's going to have to prove it to me. We got Holger Rune, who's coming in as a 15th seed, who, listen, we know he wants it more than anybody. And then he got Khachanov. And then we got Novak Djokovic, who, for the first couple of rounds, Parsa, you know, I've never even heard of the three guys around him. So
he's got a great draw, Nima.
A fantastic draw. Where he's, even if he's at 60%, I don't think he would lose a set. So, I mean, like, Rune is his potential fourth round opponent, or Khachanov. That would be tough, for sure. But up until then, I mean, he could definitely work himself you know, into the tournament and be in good shape. And it's Novak Djokovic, 7-time Wimbledon champion, 24-time Grand Slam winner. So can we really not look at him? But I mean, I think Djokovic, like in Nadal, is one of those guys who's got to be feeling good to win these tournaments. And because he hasn't won even a tournament this year, and he's coming in, you know, off of some surgery, off of the withdrawal at the French, I think you can't overlook Novak in any way, shape, or form. But if he plays a guy like a hurt catch, I really don't think he, at this stage, I think in the back of his mind, Parsa, when you have accomplished as much as Djokovic has, you got to think that all the chips, every effort and mental, you know, thing that you have has to be pointing towards the Olympic Games in Paris. Because you have literally the only guy who has won everything else except for the Olympic gold. And if he can win that, I mean, that's just going to be something incredible, because he's won every Masters 1000, won the Davis Cup, won every Grand Slam, been number one, longest time, holds, you know, the record for the most majors. I mean, that would just be tremendous for him. So for that reason, I'm going to be going with an Alcaraz Hurkacz final, and I'm going to be going with Alcaraz to defend his title. What do you have?
Yeah, I mean, that's phenomenal analysis, although I disagree with you, which is good. I mean, that's the whole point of it. Yeah. You know, I looked at the draw and I was like, Djokovic, no, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I look at the draw and I'm like, wait a second. His first, like, high quality guy, you may think Rune's got a shot, but Rune's got no shot. Not happening. You know, you may think Eubanks is going to do something, but no shot, not happening. Khachanov, not happening. So,
yeah.
Who is it going to be? It's going to be Hurkacz in the semifinal. That's going to be his first real test. So you're telling me that Djokovic, this is like a Nadal type of draw, where Nadal is like licking his chops. He hasn't played in a year, and he's just able to work his way through these matches and start to gain confidence and form. And I think Djokovic is going all the way, not even to a semifinal, but I'm saying he's beating Hurkacz in the semis. He's going to beat Alcaraz, because Alcaraz is going to get beat up in the final as revenge, and I think he's going to be number 25. I disagree. The part I disagree with you is that I don't think the Olympic means anything to him. I think he wants to play for his country, and I don't think he views you know, the Olympic Games as some sort of, you know, I have to have it, I have to do it. But I still think the Grand Slams, and he said it numerous times, you know, what's important to me is the slams now, and putting those away. And
So getting an 8th Wimbledon title is,
for me,
way more important.
Way more important, you know, because the Olympic Games, even now, it's still a little light. Like, people are withdrawing.
Does he tie Federer at 8, or would he surpass him? I got to check that. I think Federer has 8, right?
I thought Federer has 7, but,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I feel like, you know, it's yeah, he's won it 8 times, Nima. I just checked, which is incredible. I mean, so he's going to tie Federer at Wimbledon. I mean, that's a joke. But appropriate as well, you know, because the guy has been, you know, as you saw, did you watch the Amazon Prime, by the way, the 12?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I've been
spamming, I mean, work, so. just a lot of, like, insight into what's going on behind the scenes, and pretty cool. I would highly suggest that any tennis fan watches it. I watched it with my son, and he was in tears, even though he's probably pretty much too young to really understand Federer's impact on the game. You know, his emotions and his ability, his tennis knowledge, his tennis brain, his tennis body, is, it comes through the screen in those 12 days, and you could see the respect that the world had, and the respect that he ultimately had for Djokovic, and Djokovic had for him. And I feel like Djokovic is a different beast because of Federer. And I think for him to match Federer at Wimbledon is going to mean more than anything. And I think what's really at risk, to be honest, is the U.S. Open for Djokovic. I think you're right. He is going to go to Paris and try to do damage. I'm just not sure that he can make that transition on a bum knee. And, you know, it's a little tricky. So I think that the preparation for the U.S. Open is going to be subpar, and I think that could be where the effect happens. I don't know, but I've got Djokovic number 25, man. I think that this is the perfect setup for a GOAT. The GOAT who is forgotten, the GOAT who is injured, the GOAT who has absolutely no pressure, Nima. The guy has won the tournament 7 times, and he's got no pressure. Are you kidding me? Like, what? You know, no way, dude.
And he's got a cakewalk draw.
And a cakewalk draw. So if the guy loses 4th round, you'll be like, well, he was injured. You know, he's focusing on Paris. The guy has no pressure. That's insane. Like, I don't want to play Djokovic. I don't even want to play Djokovic in mini tennis with no pressure. Like, let alone real tennis in a best of five at a tournament in a court that he's won 7 times. The whole thing. So
yeah.
That's what I got for you.
I love it. Okay, guys. So with that being said, that's it for this week's show. Parsa and I will be back to preview the U.S. Open later. It's not July yet, Parsa, so technically in a couple months. We'll be back because it's still June here. We don't want to, you know, go forward too much. But so Parsa and I will be back to preview all the action in NYC. In the meantime, be good. Thank you, Parsa, for joining us as always.
Thank you. Awesome job.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Make sure to download this podcast on iTunes, on Android. Make sure to check us out on all our social media platforms. We've got some good stuff coming up. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.